This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki in New Plymouth, thanks to New Zealand On Air. For more local content, search for accessradiotaranaki.com.
Hello and welcome to Thoughts in the Open. My name is Zoe, and on this show, I talk about all of the arts, including meditation and mindfulness. We're reading stories from Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. Make sure to check out your library or bookstores online to see if you can get one. Amna al-Haddad. Once upon a time, there was a journalist named Amna. Amna was not happy. She was overweight and unfit. One day, she said to herself, "You can do much more than this. Just do something. Go for a walk." And that's what she did. She enjoyed her walks so much, she wanted to do more. She ran long distances, she sprinted, she started to work out at the gym. When she discovered weightlifting, she knew this was the sport for her. Amna's life changed when the International Weightlifting Federation allowed Muslim women to compete in unitard, an outfit that covers all skin. She started competing in Europe and America and became an icon for Muslim girls across the world. "I like being strong," says Amna. "Being a girl does not mean you can't be as strong as a boy, or even stronger." She liked weightlifting so much that she started training for the Olympic Games in Rio. She thinks everyone should find a sport they like and practice it. Whatever your age, religion, or ethnicity, sport is good for everyone, she says. It creates peace and unites nations. No matter what the challenges are, never walk away from your dream. The more you persist, closer you are to getting to your goals. When things get tough, just get tougher. That's Amna al-Haddad. The next one is of Claudia Lugarini. Once there was a girl who had to change her name. "Hey Marisa," her friends would call out. Nobody knew that her real name was Claudia. It was too dangerous. Claudia lived at a time where Italy was ruled by a tyrannical man called Benito Mussolini. During Mussolini's dictatorship, you couldn't read certain books, you couldn't watch certain movies, you couldn't express your opinion, and you couldn't vote. Claudia believed in freedom and decided to fight this man with all her strength, so she joined a group of partigiana in Italian, to help bring down the dictator. Claudia's group was made up of young university students. They would meet in secret after class to bring out their newspaper. But how could they spread their message with Mussolini's police everywhere? Claudia was incredibly brave. She cycled around delivering newspapers and messages from one secret location to another for almost 2 years. One day, the regime finally collapsed. The national radio announced that Italy was free from fascism, and people flooded onto the streets to celebrate. Claudia, Marisa had one task. With a small group of partisans, she entered the office of Italy's national newspaper and officially liberated it from censorship after 20 years. Finally, they were free to print the truth, and Claudia's friends could call her by her normal name at last. That was Claudia Lugarini. Next is Cleopatra, one of my favorites. I studied Egypt for quite a while. Once upon a time, in ancient Egypt, a pharaoh died and left his kingdom to his 10-year-old son, Ptolemy XIII, and to his 18-year-old daughter, Cleopatra. The two had such different ideas on how to run the country that soon Cleopatra was kicked out of the palace and a civil war broke out. Julius Caesar, the emperor of Rome, traveled to Egypt to help Cleopatra and Ptolemy find an agreement. "If only I could meet Caesar before my brother does," Cleopatra thought. "I could convince him that I'm the better pharaoh." But she had been banished from the palace. The guards would have locked her at the entrance. Cleopatra asked her servants to roll her up inside a carpet and to smuggle her into Caesar's rooms. Impressed by her daring, Caesar restored Cleopatra to the throne. They became a couple and had a son. Cleopatra moved to Rome, but then Caesar was killed, so she went back to Egypt. The new Roman leader, Mark Antony, had heard a lot about his strong Egyptian queen and wanted to meet her. This time, she arrived on a golden barge, surrounded by precious jewels and silk. It was love at first sight. Cleopatra and Mark Antony were inseparable. They had three children and loved each other to the end of their lives. When Cleopatra died, the emperor ended with her. She was the last pharaoh to rule ancient Egypt. That was Cleopatra. Next is Koi Matis. Once upon a time, a boy named Koi was born. Koi loved dresses, the color pink, and shiny shoes. Koi wanted his parents to address him as she and didn't like wearing boys' clothes. His parents let him wear whatever he liked. One night, Koi asked his mum, "When are we going to the doctor to have me fixed into a girl?" The doctor explained, "Usually boys feel okay with being boys, and girls are fine with being girls. But there are some boys who feel female, and girls who feel male. They're called transgender. And Koi is a transgender girl. She was born in a boy's body, but deep inside she feels that she's a girl, and she should be allowed to be one." From then on, Koi's mum and dad asked everyone to treat Koi as a girl. But when school started, they had an unexpected problem. Koi has to either use the boys' bathroom or the bathroom for disabled children, the teacher said. "But I'm not a boy," Koi wailed. "And I'm not disabled. I'm a girl." Koi's parents talked to a judge about the situation. The judge thought about it and decided Koi should be allowed to use whichever bathroom she wants. Koi and her parents threw a big party to celebrate. They ate pink cake, and Koi wore a sparkly pink dress and beautiful pink shoes. That was Koi Matis. Next, we have Jill Tata. Once there was a girl who wanted to become friends with the stars. Her name was Jill. "How can we be alone in the universe when the sky is so big?" she used to wonder. She couldn't stop thinking about it, so when she grew up, she decided to search the skies for extraterrestrial life. She became an astronomer and director of SETI, the most important center for scientific research into the possibility of life in outer space. For years, Jill and her team investigated hundreds of star systems, including radio telescopes located around the world. Every night, she looked for signs of civilization on some distant planet. Nobody knew, and even today, nobody knows what communication system aliens might be using. The only thing we do know is that the universe is too big for us to be its only inhabitants. Jill especially enjoyed her solitary walks at night under the starry night. "I'd walk to the control room and start my shift at midnight. Orion was right above my head, like an old friend," she recalls. None of her research so far has established any scientific proof for extraterrestrial life, but she hasn't lost hope. "No one has ever said there are no fish in the sea just because one glass of water came up empty," she said. That was Jill Tata. Next we have Maria Callas. Maria was a clumsy and unpopular girl. She was sure that her mother loved her sister more because her sister was slimmer, prettier, and more popular than her. One day, Maria's mother discovered that her little daughter had an amazing voice. She encouraged Maria to sing in order to earn money for their family. Maria's mother tried to enroll her in the National Conservatory in Athens, but Maria was rejected because she had never had any formal training. So her mother sent her to a private teacher. When her teacher first heard her sing, she was speechless. It was the most amazing voice she had ever heard. Not only did Maria master all the most difficult areas, in a matter of a few months, her singing style went straight to the heart. Maria applied to the National Conservatory again, and this time she was accepted. One night she made her debut on the stage of the most prestigious opera house in the world, La Scala in Milan. When she sang, the audience hung on to every note and every word, as her voice carried them away to a place full of passion, rage, joy, and love. At the end, they jumped to their feet, clapping and shouting, and showered the stage with roses. Maria came to be known simply as La Divina, the Divine One, the most famous soprano ever. That is Maria Callas. Grace Hopper. Once upon a time, there was a little girl called Grace who really wanted to understand how alarm clocks worked. She started taking apart all the clocks she could find. First one, then another, then the third. By the time she got to her seventh clock, her mum realized there were no more clocks in the house and told her to stop. Grace kept tinkering with anything she found interesting. Eventually, she became a professor of math and physics. During the Second World War, she joined the Navy, like her grandfather, who was an admiral. She was assigned to work on a special project. "Come and meet Mark," they said. She went into a room, but instead of a person, she was introduced to the first computer called Mark I. It filled the entire room, and since it was the first, no one knew exactly how to use it, so Grace started studying it. It took a lot of hard work. But thanks to the programs, Grace wrote for Mark I and its successors. U.S. forces were able to decode secret messages sent by their enemies during World War. While she was old, Grace tried to retire more than once, but she was always called back because of her extraordinary expertise. She eventually became an admiral like her grandfather. All her life, Grace went to bed early and woke up at 5 a.m. to work on computer coding. She never stopped being curious, and her incredible work showed the world what computers could do. That is Grace Hopper. Next, we have one of my personal favorites, Jane Goodall. Once in England, there was a girl called Jane who loved climbing trees and reading books. Her dream was to go to Africa and spend time with wild animals there. So, one day, Jane flew to Tanzania with her notebook and binoculars, determined to study real chimpanzees in their natural habitat. At first, it was hard to get close to them. The chimpanzees would run away the moment she was in sight, but Jane kept visiting the same place every day at the same time. Eventually, the chimps allowed her to get closer. Getting closer was not enough for Jane. She wanted to become friends with them, so she started a banana club. Whenever she visited the chimpanzees, she would share bananas with them. At the time, little was known about chimpanzees. Some scientists used to observe them from far away using binoculars. Others studied chimps in cages. Jane, instead, spent hours hanging out with chimpanzees. She tried to speak to them using grunts and cries. She climbed trees and ate the same foods they ate. She discovered that chimpanzees have rituals, that they use tools, and that their language comprises at least 20 different sounds. She even discovered that chimpanzees are not vegetarians. Once, Jane rescued an injured chimpanzee and nursed it back to health. When she released it back into the wild, the chimpanzee turned and gave her a long, loving hug, as if to say, "Thanks! Bye!" That is Jane Goodall. Next is Nancy Wake. Once there was a girl who became a secret agent when she was just 16 years old. She traveled by herself from Australia to England and convinced a newspaper to hire her. When the Second World War broke out, she joined the French resistance, the Maquis, in their fight against the Nazis. After escaping to England, Nancy parachuted back to France so she could help train and organize resistant fighters and rescue British pilots who had been shot down over France. She got them fake identity papers and then ferried them across the mountains to Spain so they could get back to Britain safely. She outwitted the German secret police, the Gestapo. at every turn and was soon on their worst wanted list. They nicknamed her the White Mouse because she seemed impossible to catch. Nancy was also a great soldier. She was a great shot and never lost her nerve. When her unit suffered a surprise attack by the Germans, she took command of a section whose leader had been killed, and, with exceptional coolness, organized a retreat with no further losses. When the war ended in France and was finally liberated, Nancy was awarded the George Medal by the British. The French gave her 3 Croix de Guerre medals and the Medaille de la Résistance. They later made her a knight, the Legion of Honor, their highest award. The Americans awarded her the Medal of Freedom. That is Nancy Wake. Next is Sonita Alizadeh. When Sonita was 10 years old, her parents told her, "We have to sell you into marriage." They started buying her nice clothes and taking more care of her than they had ever done before. Sonita did not know exactly what all this meant, but she knew she did not want to get married. She wanted to study, to write, and to sing songs. She told her mother so. Her mother said to her, "We need the money to buy a bride for your older brother. There is no choice. We must sell you." At the last moment, the marriage arrangements fell through. War broke out in Afghanistan, where the family lived, and Sonita and her brother were sent away to live in a refugee camp in Iran. Sonita went to a school nearby, and she started writing down her songs. When Sonita was 16 years old, her mom came to visit her. She told Sonita that she had to go back to Afghanistan because they had found another husband who wanted to buy her. Again, Sonita said no. Sonita loved her mom, but she did not want to get married. She wanted to be a rapper. She wrote a hard-hitting song called "Brides for Sale" and uploaded it on YouTube. The video went viral and Sonita became famous. She won a scholarship to study music in America. "In my country, a good girl should be silent," says Sonita. "But I want to share the words that are in my heart." That is Sonita Alizadeh. Next, we have Wilma Rudolph. Long ago, before the vaccine for polio was discovered, children were not protected against this terrible disease. Wilma was a little child when she contracted polio and was left with a paralyzed leg. "I'm not sure she's ever going to walk again," the doctor said. "You will walk again, honey, I promise," whispered Wilma's mom. Every week, her mom took Wilma to the city for treatment. Every day, her 21 brothers and sisters took turns massaging her weak leg. Wilma had to use braces to walk, and the mean kids in her neighborhood would make fun of her. Sometimes, when her parents were not home, she tried to walk without braces. It was hard, but Wilma slowly got stronger. By the time she was 9, her mum's promise came true. Wilma could walk by herself. She even started playing basketball. She loved jumping and running, so she did not think twice when her coach asked her if she wanted to join the track team. Wilma competed in 20 races and won every one of them. "I don't know why I run so fast," she said. "I just run." Wilma became the fastest woman in the world, bringing great joy to her family and to her country. She broke 3 world records at the 1960 Olympics. Wilma always said that the key to winning was knowing how to lose. Nobody wins all the time. If you can pick up after a crushing defeat and go on to win again, you're going to be a champion someday. That is Wilma Rudolph. Next, we have Yusra Mardini. Once in Damascus, Syria, there was a swimmer called Yusra. Every day, she and her sister trained with their dad at the local swimming pool. Syria was at war, and one day, a bomb was dropped onto the swimming pool. Luckily, Yusra was not there at the time. Shortly afterward, her house was destroyed by another bomb. It was another narrow escape. All of a sudden, Yusra and her family had nothing left and nowhere to live, so they decided to flee the country. Yusra had heard that Germany was a good place for swimmers. The journey was long and getting there would be hard, but that did not put Yusra off. She and her sister joined a group of other refugees for a long month journey across several countries, and then on board a rubber dinghy to the island of Lesbos. The boat was only meant for 6 or 7 people. There were 20 crammed aboard. Suddenly, the motor broke down. "We can't die at sea," Yusra thought. "We are swimmers," and so she jumped into the water with her sister and another boy. They kicked and swam and dragged and pushed the boat for more than 3 hours until they finally reached the shore. When they reached Germany, their first question Yusra asked was, "Where can I find a swimming club?" Not only did she find one, in 2016, she was part of the first refugee team ever to compete in the Olympics. That is Yusra Mardini. Next, we have Michelle Obama. Once upon a time, there was a girl who was always afraid. Her name was Michelle Robinson, and she lived in a one-bedroom apartment in Chicago with her family. "Maybe I'm not smart enough, maybe I'm not good enough," she worried, and her mother would say, "If it can be done, you can do it. Anything is possible," said her dad. Michelle worked hard. Sometimes teachers told her she should not aim too high because her grades were not that good. Some people said she would never achieve something big because she was just a girl from the south side of Chicago. But Michelle chose to listen to her parents. Anything was possible, she thought, so she graduated from Harvard and became a lawyer at a big firm. One day, her boss asked her to mentor a young lawyer. His name was Barack Hussein Obama. They fell in love and got married a few years later. One day, Barack told her he wanted to become the President of the United States. At first, she thought he was crazy, but then she remembered, "If it can be done, you can do it." So she quit her job and helped him on his campaign. Barack won the elections twice, and Michelle became the first African-American First Lady of the United States. "No one is born smart. You become smart through hard work," is her motto. Maria Montessori. Once upon a time, there was a teacher who worked with disabled children. Her name was Maria, and she was also a doctor. Instead of applying old teaching methods, Maria watched children to see how they learned. In her school, children were not forced to do what their teachers had told them to do. They could move about freely and choose whatever activity they loved the most. Maria's innovative techniques proved to be very efficient with disabled children, so she decided to open a school for all children and apply the same teaching methods. She called her school the Children's House. For the Children's House, Maria invented child-sized furniture, small light chairs that children could move around easily, low shelves so they could reach things without needing a grown-up. Maria also invented toys that encouraged children to discover the world in a very practical and independent way. In her classes, children discovered how to button and unbutton their shirts, how to carry a glass of water without spilling it, and how to lay the tables by themselves. Children would be taught to be self-sufficient, she said. If they know how to tie their shoes and how to dress themselves, they'll feel the happiness that comes from independence. Maria Montessori's method is applied in thousands of schools, and it helps children all over the world grow strong and free. That's Maria Montessori. Next is Nellie Bly. In a Pennsylvania village, there was a girl who always dressed in pink. Her name was Nellie. When her father passed away, the family fell on hard times. She went out looking for a job to help her mother make ends meet. One day, Nellie read an article in a local newspaper. It was about what girls are good for. In the article, girls who worked were described as monsters because the author believed that a woman's place was in the home. Furious, Nellie wrote a passionate letter to the editor. Impressed by her writing style, the editor offered her a job as a reporter. Nellie proved soon to be a brave investigative journalist. She moved to New York and joined the New York World, a newspaper run by a famous man called Joseph Pulitzer. Once she pretended to be mentally ill and got herself checked into a mental institution to expose how badly the patients were treated. She was fearless, clever, and compassionate. The newspaper sent her a challenge. Jules Verne had written a popular novel called Around the World in 80 Days. Could she do it in less time? It took Nellie just a few hours to pack a small bag and set sail from New York in a steamer. Traveling by ship, rail, and even donkey, she set herself a grueling pace. People placed bets on whether she would succeed or fail. Finally, 72 days, 6 hours, and 11 minutes later, she arrived back in New York. She had made it. That is Nellie Bly. Next we have Wang Zhanyi. Once upon a time in China, there was a young girl who liked to study all sorts of things. She loved math, science, geography, medicine, and writing poetry. She was also great at horse riding and martial arts. Her name was Wang. Wang traveled widely and was curious about everything, but above all, she loved astronomy. She spent hours studying the planets, the sun, the stars, and the moon. At that time, people thought that a lunar eclipse was a sign that the gods were angry. Wang knew that this couldn't be true and decided to prove it with an experiment. She put a round table, the earth, and a garden pavilion. From the ceiling, she hung a lamp, the sun. Off to one side, she placed a big round mirror, the moon. Then she decided she'd start to move these objects exactly as they move in the sky, until the earth, the sun, and the moon stood in line. With the earth in the middle, there you go. A lunar eclipse happens every time the moon passes directly through the earth's shadow. Wang also understood the importance of making math and science accessible for common people. Until she got rid of all the articulate language and wrote a paper explaining the force of gravity. Her reputation spread far and wide. In her poems, she often wrote about the importance of equality between men and women. Daughters can also be heroic, says Wang Zhanyi. That is Wang Zhanyi. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. Make sure to tune in to my fortnightly broadcasts, Friday at 3 p.m. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Zigzag NZ.
If you think my topics and facts are way out there, you should see where Zigzag Tours go. Epic adventures across every inch of New Zealand and the sponsors of this show. So make sure to check out zigzagnz.com.
Adios!
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.